Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Rabbi Eric Greenberg, his friends and family. And we want this to be the best year ever for all our friends, family, and loyal listeners worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce, Barry, and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into JoyceBarryandFriends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber, and even a fan, by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is JoyceBarry.com. Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever. We have a very important show today, anti-Semitism. What can you do to stop it? And folks, you don't have to be Jewish to listen to this show, to appreciate the show, and want to do your part. Our guest speaker is Rabbi Eric Greenberg. He says we must do our part to stop anti-Semitism. Just recently, Jewish community centers in cities across the country, spanning 17 states, received calls with bomb threats. There was a hate wave of anti-Semitic graffiti scrawled on homes, on cars, in the New York City subways, and even on synagogues. This violence, these threats must stop now. What can you do if you care about people and hate racism in any form? That is one question we will address in today's show.
First, let me just give you a little microscope of who Rabbi Eric Greenberg is. And I say a little microscope because I have two pages, single space, of who he is and his accomplishments. So just to give you a tad of an idea, he is a leading interfaith expert, communications and program director, and an international award-winning reporter. He most recently worked as director of outreach communications programs and interfaith relations for the Multi-Faith Alliance for Syrian Refugees, the nation's largest coalition of faith-based groups to assist Syrian refugees in partnership with the American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee. Previously, he was National Director of Outreach and Interfaith Affairs for the Anti-Defamation League, where he developed and maintained strategic partnerships with a wide range of faith leaders in organizations, including Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, Protestant, Evangelical, Mormon, Muslim, and Buddhist, and so many more. He has had meetings with three Roman Catholic popes, St. John Paul II, Pope Benedict XVI, and Pope Francis. Rabbi Greenberg was a national award-winning investigative newspaper reporter and editor with expertise in environmental and religion reported, honored by Investigative Reporters and Editors, Society of Professional Journalists, the Washington Journalism Center, and the American Jewish Press Association. Rabbi Greenberg, it is an honor. It is a pleasure. I am absolutely delighted that you're joining us today.
Well, thank you, Joyce. It's great to be with you, and thank you. We could skip most of those introductions next time.
it's
very long.
That's only like 8 sentences. I've got about 80.
That's okay.
So I'm delighted that you even had the time to be with us today. We're very humbled by that. So, Rabbi Greenberg, where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with the last couple of days. I mean, we're talking about anti-Semitism, and across the world there are incidents. There are so many that some of them aren't even being reported widely. So what happened this weekend in Amsterdam, a group of tenants removed a plaque honoring a Holocaust martyr, a Holocaust victim who lived in that building. And they took it down because they said, you know, we don't want to be reminded of this anymore. So they just took it down. And this is outrageous. And if you go to the Anne Frank Center website, you'll see the strong condemnation of this action. And then this morning or late last night, I woke up to...
Wait one second. I'm going to interrupt you for one second because
sure.
I just have to say it. One of the things I always wanted to see, it was on my bucket list, and I did go to Amsterdam. I was in the Anne Frank house. I did go to that attic where she was. It's a memory I will never, ever forget.
Absolutely. And it's more powerful today. Anne Frank is a symbol both of the Holocaust and of course, her diary being taught in classrooms around the world in, I think, 60 different languages or more. But also as a symbol of the failure to help people, to help refugees. She and her her family were turned away from the United States. They tried to get out. And that's something that, you know, we're living with now 70 years later, and here we are staring us in the face, refugee issues where still people aren't being let in who need to be saved. So she serves as a blessing to all of us to remember the failures of our past and how we have to correct them.
What's sad is on Sunday morning, I watch all the news programs. I start my morning and get everyone's take on it. And you're right. So with all the news I listened to, there wasn't a word about any of that.
Yeah, that's the problem. The problem is that there's so many of these. This happened. The second incident was in France, We're in a small village, in a small Jewish cemetery. 80% of the headstones were knocked down and desecrated over the weekend. And if you, you know, you'll have to search for it. You go on Google or whatever your, you know, server is, and you find it, and it doesn't rise to the level of front page news, but these are happening all the time now, and that's the issue that we have to deal with.
But what's scary, that sounds like where it starts. If we don't put a stop now, that's how the Holocaust got launched, with horrible things against the Jews. I'm not saying they were dealing with cemeteries, but it just started where people didn't take it seriously, and the next thing and the next thing. And to this day, I say, where was the world when all this was happening? So that's why these shows are important. Where are you now?
Right, right. We need each. It's like democracy. We have to be vigilant all the time, and you know, it takes effort, it takes resources, it takes energy, and sometimes our energy wanes. You know, we're living our lives and we have lots of things to do, but in a case now where these incidents are multiplying, we need to stand up and we need to put a stop to it and draw a line now. Because, as you say, you don't draw a line now, and what happens?
Exactly. And what's scary, it's not just national. We're talking international. We're talking around the world. That's what makes it even scarier. Where are you safe? Where are you free from racism, anti-Semitism? It's just getting worse and worse. You'd think by now we'd be past all this.
Well, you know, the world works, the pendulum swings, you know, back and forth, and we are now in a phase where there's right-wing politicians and political parties who are on the ascendancy. And, you know, across Europe, obviously we have Brexit, which is a major source of confusion and problems for both England and the European Union. It's created an environment where, you know, right-wing politicians and parties are able to push their agenda, and their agenda usually includes things like anti-immigrant, anti-refugee, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia. You know, it's basically against all minorities, and we need to band together, and that's one of the messages here. People of goodwill, religious leaders and people in the pews, and people of no religion of goodwill now have to band together. We have to stand up together and mobilize, and it's starting to happen, but it's going to take time and it takes effort, and that's what we have to keep doing.
I think with the advent of the internet and social media, it seems to supercharge these attacks. They reinforce the hatred. So one of the things is social media, Twitter, Facebook, has to be diligent in making sure these things do not appear.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? There's a blessing and a curse, and the internet clearly is a blessing and a curse. In terms of, you know, mobilizing, for instance, getting a bunch of people together for a good cause, raising money to help someone, people in a disaster situation, the internet is a blessing. It's wonderful. It's a way to get people, you know, quickly. And for protest situations, as you know, over the inauguration weekend, that was the source of being able to get people together of like mind, who wanted to make their opinions known around the world, around the world, actually, more pointedly in Washington D.C. and around cities in the country. So that's all for the good. The problem with the internet, the curse, is the proliferation of hatred, and we haven't quite gotten a handle on that. My friends at ADL. Are doing, you know, terrific work in working with organizations like Google and Facebook, and trying to walk the tightrope between free speech and hate speech. And that's a difficult thing to do. We're still struggling with it. But the hate speech is there, and all you have to do is just, you know, go on the internet and see all the hate groups that are sending messages, and now we're dealing with, of course, them sending fake news, what we call fake news. I hate that phrase, by the way. Sending erroneous messages, posing as real information, and we have to really now ratchet up to deal with that.
I just want to say, Rabbi, to those folks who don't know ADL, what it stands for, that would be the Anti-Defamation League, and the website is ADL.org, founded in 1913 by B'nai B'rith, and the first speaker was Livingston. That was the first leader. The whole point is to stop the defamation of the Jewish people and to secure justice and fair treatment for all. So I just want to start by offering you folks that as a resource. If you want to make a difference of any kind, that would be one way to do it, is to check out the website and see what you can do, ADL.org. Back
right.
to you, Rabbi.
Right. No, and that's very helpful because one of it's one of the great organizations that are really spending resources and have, you know, a sustained effort to deal with the problems, as I said before, the curse of the internet, the proliferation of anti-Semitism. And as you say, it's for stop the defamation of and secure the rights of all people. And you know, that's what we need to do. That's the antidote, I think. I've been involved in interfaith, multi-faith relations for many years, and the more the minor religious groups in this country who basically were just minding their own business and trying to live their lives, the Sikh community, S-I-K-H, were, you know, not in the news really at all. Except after 9/11, when they were being mistaken for Muslims by haters who were attacking them. They have beards. They wear their, you know, they have their headgear. So haters out there were saying, oh, that must be a Muslim. They're not Muslim, but that shouldn't be an excuse. But then we suddenly learned about the Sikh community, and it's a wonderful religious tradition. They're in the United States and have been here for many years. And they are now being attacked, and we have to band together to counter this rise in racism and religious hatred. And we can only do it together. We can't do it alone.
Are you involved in any official capacity with ADL?
Not anymore. I'm a supporter. I was the interfaith director, outreach and interfaith director for many years, and the organization has continued to do the work that it's, as you said, 1913. It came out of hatred of Jews, frankly. Is why ADL was set up, and for those wanting to know the history, it's nicely recorded on their website. But there are other organizations now, both Jewish and not, who are also ratcheting up and realizing that they can't, you know, we have to do this together. The as I said before, the Anne Frank Center, which is now the Anne Frank Center for Mutual Respect, is very interested in doing some really great work over the last couple of months, sounding the alarm for this rise in anti-Semitism, you know, getting back to your topic.
Anne Frank Center, is there a website for that movement?
Yes, it's, let me see, off the top of my head. You could always put in Google Anne Frank Center. It's probably annefrankcenter.org, I would think. Their executive director, Stephen Goldstein, is really leading one of the great leaders now of pointing out the anti-Semitism and not letting people get away with it. So for these incidents, for instance, we have to stand up, you know, directly. In France, the desecration and the damage to the cemeteries. Well, the French Jewish community obviously stood up and said something, but it should be Jews from all over, certainly in the American Jewish community, and it shouldn't just be Jews. It should be, you know, goodwill people from all religions and none who say you can't go into a cemetery and desecrate it. And that's obviously, we know that's been happening in the United States. And, you know, there have been strong, loud condemnations from various, you know, religious leaders over the past, I don't know what, 2 months now. Not enough from our government leaders. And they're the ones who lead the way. They have to stand up much more strongly and start investigating and showing that, you know, this government will not stand for this kind of activity.
I just looked up the Frank Center, and the first statement on what I Googled is something that I felt and that I've stated, and that is, quote, whether or not your intention, the group says, your presidency has given the oxygen of incitement to some of the most viciously helpful elements of our society. And I totally agree with that. And it said, following the most recent round of bomb threats against Jewish community centers, the head of Anne Frank Center for Mutual Respect said that President Trump is at least partly to blame to the nationalistic thread that runs through his administration, in addition to his failure to explicitly condemn the hateful acts.
And what do you think of that?
No, I've been saying that all along. We brought on Bannon, who's known to be anti-Semitic. It's been in his websites and all of that. So this is something that I've been saying all along. Now I'm seeing it saying the same thing by a highly respectful organization, which, by the way, I hadn't heard of it before, so I thank you for that.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, so great minds think alike, I think, is what you want to say. and it's good to have people stand up and you know, we live in a society where there's lots of noise out there, and now even worse, there's attempts to either undermine or just call right out something that's true, calling it fake. And we have to get past this fairly quickly, because we have to, in order to live in our society, we have to have the same set of facts. We can disagree on policy. We can disagree on approaches and political philosophies. And, you know, Hobbes and Locke and the great, not to get to, this is from my graduate school days, but, you know, some of the great political philosophers, you know, of the last 500 years. And, of course, you know, in Jewish terms, Hillel and Shammai, they disagreed. They disagreed on the approach, how we're supposed to observe, how we. But they didn't they didn't call the other one names, and they didn't say it's a lie what you're saying. So, you know, that's what we're facing now. That we somebody has an apple and the other side doesn't like the apple and says that's not an apple, that's an orange.
Right.
But it's an apple. You cannot like the apple. I can like the Red Delicious apple, and you can say you don't like it. But to say because you don't like it, it's not an apple, is out of reality. And that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, we're dealing with 24 hours a day of tweets that are insightful, and they're against everything from Broadway shows to superstars. But I didn't see any tweets on banning anti-Semitism. They're banning the plays, the people, the reporters. I didn't see anything in the tweets on anti-Semitism.
Well, and that's the criticism of you know, the Anne Frank Center and of ADL, and you know, that needs to be pointed out. But there also needs to be consequences from this. In other words, there needs to be. We can't just get up and say something and then just have it you know, leave be in the 24-hour news cycle and then leave. There has to be some kind of action that takes place to address the concern. And, you know, we the people, I think you had mentioned, you know, recently, we the people have to get up and make our voices heard together. And this is an American concept, you know, united we stand. You know,
divided we fall.
Right. I mean, the one of the original flags, which had the serpent cut up into different slices, and you know, we must hang together and not separately.
I just noted that the Anne Frank Center is located in New York City, with Stephen Goldstein, as you mentioned, at the helm. And I just want you to know that within 2 days, I will have him on the phone to be on our show.
So, well, I will tell you.
I never even heard of it.
If you send me a you know, a note, I will be happy to pass it on to Stephen and recommend that he take you up on your offer. You'll love him.
Oh, thank you, Rabbi. As I said, until you mentioned, I never even heard of it. I just know that, you know, everything Anne Frank I was so into that. That was why I wanted to go to Amsterdam, with all the places on the map for a vacation, just because of the whole Anne Frank thing. I mean, the whole thing, the story still reaches deep into my soul, such a young girl and what she went through.
Well, let me ask you, since you were there, I've not been able to get over there. What was your impression about the, you know, the museum?
For some reason, you're sounding far away.
Oh, I'm sorry. How's this? I actually put my hand
over. Oh, fine. It was always fine until the last sentence.
I was moving the receiver from one hand to the next.
Well, you see now that
what was your impression?
You can't move without me knowing. Go ahead.
Exactly. I won't move without you knowing. What was your impression of the Jewish content of the exhibit or of the museum?
I was in such a place of fascination and awe. I didn't think anything of the kind. I know they had all the books downstairs, you know, all the literary works, just being in the attic. So I didn't really come from a place of what would I do differently.
Oh, okay, great. All right.
Why? What's your take?
No, just curious. I you know, I've looked at their materials, and they have a very you know, universal approach to the story. And I was wondering, you know, how much.
Oh, I hadn't seen the materials. I went through the whole tour.
Yeah.
I hadn't gone, because when I want to read about Anne Frank, I get something out of the library, or I see it in, you know, wherever I see it. So
right.
I really didn't go through. You know, they take you all the way through. And just being in there, it just makes it so real. Sometimes you have something and it seems so real of what goes on and all of that. And it was amazing just being there.
Yeah. That's on my list of things to do. But, you know, and back to the original, you know, question that you asked, it's anti-Semitism is it's been studied. There are programs and, you know, university projects, and we still in 2017 are dealing with it more than ever. And where the answer is, it's not clear. Obviously, education. Obviously, creating relationships. When you know people, when you get to know them, you can't then suddenly hide behind, well, they're this or they're that. They're actually a person. But I want to suggest, and maybe something to discuss another time. There's a doctor, a brain specialist I spoke to a couple of years back, who believed that when you're infected with a hatred that comes from birth or comes from your belief system, it sort of just becomes part of your brain pattern thinking, and it's very, very difficult to change. He compared it to becoming a nicotine addict. You know, it's very hard to get off nicotine once you become an addict. And his suggestion was that because Judaism has been attacked and reviled as a religion for, you know, thousands of years, that it's sort of in to use this phrase, unscientific phrase, the DNA of certain peoples, and very, very difficult to get past. But we have to. We have to try.
You know, that makes a lot of sense to me, because out of my recent research, that makes sense to me. All my highly intelligent friends that I so respect, I wait a few weeks and then I call with everything going on around the Trump campaign. Have you had any change of thoughts? And I really call it brainwash. No matter what he says, no matter what he does, they said, wait and see, he'll be the best president of all time. No matter what I cite, they are, like he said, if I shot someone on Fifth Avenue, my supporters would still be with me. Well, we haven't gotten to that point yet, but no matter what it is, I never saw anything like it, how they stick up for him, all of them. Not one had an iota of a change.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to bring it back to the ancient hatred of Jews, and that it's been embedded in the religion, certainly in Christianity, from, you know, near the beginning. And what happens is it becomes part of your theology. So this is how it works. This is the way I see it, at least. If you're a child, if you're brought up in a church, and you hear on your holiest days negative things about Jews, Jews did this, Jews the deicide charge, you know, Jews are responsible for, you know, the crucifixion.
Right.
They should be made to wander, you know, around the world. They're, you know, all the negative remarks or comments about Jews that are embedded in a liturgy. Well, your liturgy is your prayers, right? So if you're raised to say these things, and even if you're a smart, you know, you're an intelligent, open-minded person, this becomes part of who you are. This way of thinking about a certain people. And as my friend, who was, by the way, an Eastern Orthodox leader, a leader in the Greek Orthodox Church, as he said to me, because he is a scientist, he said, you know, and we could do more research. You're great at research, by the way. So perhaps you can get some of this for next time. That they've been doing some studies in the brainwave patterns, and so if that's embedded in there, it's not just a question of sitting someone down and saying, oh, well, you know what, you're wrong about these people, and here's the proof, and here's a couple of, you know, books to read, and then suddenly, okay, mission accomplished. It's not going to be that easy, because it's going to take a lot more work to undo, you know, all that years and basically a couple thousand years of hatred that is part of your belief system. So in other words, if you've been taught that I killed your God, no matter how nice a person
especially
I am.
Especially at a very young age where they're so impressionable.
Right. Yeah. So no matter how, you know, if that's what you're taught year after year in your, you know, parochial school, and it's this group of people that is responsible for the death of a entity that you are, you know, told to love. That's the most important thing in your life, God. And these people, you know, let alone the idea of killing God, but that's a different, you know, philosophical issue. But if you're told that, you're really not going to have a great feeling for these people, no matter how nice that person is. Your neighbor, great guy, great person. But isn't that the people that responsible for the death of my, you know, the thing I hold most holy? So that's something to ponder.
Yes, I agree with you. Like I said, you know, just with the advent of our new president, I'm one of the people who will say he's not my president. It's just so scary, because it's showing not only the defects, the deficits in the brain power to not see what's right in front of you to see. It's so clear. Everything that goes on, I can't even stand watching the news anymore.
Yeah, I think the one of the papers, it could be the New York Times, but don't hold me to it, just did a story the last week or so interviewing experts on psychiatrists and psychologists and such about maybe ways to tune down watching the news, because it's getting very depressing for a lot of people.
Oh, it is. It definitely is. And I know from two, I know I have a very close psychic friend. He's world renowned. I have the exclusive on radio every month. And his phone is ringing off the hook. Should I leave the country with Trump at its helm? What's going to happen with him? What bad thing is he going to do? His phones are ringing off the hook. And the other group that their offices, they can't even handle it. It's all about him, are the psychiatrists.
Right. Right. Where do they go, by the way? Who do they speak to?
Yeah, that's a good point. I want to share this quote from Nelson Mandela, because I really love this. This is how I feel about Israel. Again and again, we have to fight anti-Semitism. Again and again, we have to fight hard for its survival. Again and again, we have to fight against all odds, surrounded on all sides by its enemies. Again and again, they are dragged into wars they do not want, while the world blames them for those wars. It is a never-ending battle just for the right to exist.
Exactly. Exactly. You know what? I mean, this is the positive side is if we have to now remember the great political and religious leaders who did understand the need for working together. I believe it's today is the anniversary of the speech of Martin Luther King's perhaps one of his most controversial speeches about Vietnam. And was not well received by some of his supporters. It was delivered at, I think, Riverside Church in New York. And I believe there's some kind of a celebration or commemoration there today about his speech. Worth looking at and worth reading, very relevant today. This was Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., talking about Vietnam and the effect on the soul of America. And it's something that like I say, I think is very relevant for today. And we need the Martin Luther Kings today. We need those kind of leaders, moral leaders, to stand up and show us the way.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned one of my two major causes, one being Israel and the second being civil rights, because I do a lot on that as well. And that's because I equate the two. Look what they went through in our history. Look at on both sides, the Jews and the African Americans. And you would think by now we're way past it, and we're not. Yes, we've come a long way. Sadly, we have a long way to go.
Absolutely. And those who, you know, what's happening now, like I said before, about a pendulum, it swings back and forth. We're in that where it has swung back, and we need to make some corrections, some course corrections as soon as possible.
Well, in my opinion, the swing back, the one who had the gong swinging it back was the one and only Donald Trump. But getting past that, which is a really hard thing for me to do, because you can't open up any channel without the next breaking news on something horrific happening, how we're going so far backwards in time, I still feel that sooner or later he can't go on. Sooner or later, there'll be an impeachment or something. It's been said, you mentioned the New York Times. The Los Angeles Times, I just heard, has a four-day op-ed piece, 4 days running. The first one might have been today. I can't wait to get to see that. I just heard about it. 4 pages on how Trump is acting, where they won't need to impeach him. There's a constitutional thing that they can denounce him as insane.
Well, you know, I don't want to get into the particulars of Trump necessarily, because that's something
that's a whole
other
story.
It's a whole other story. I am familiar with the Los Angeles Times project. Their first piece came out yesterday. It's a very long and very I thought, well-written editorial. And obviously people who want to look at it can look at it, could just go to the, you know, L.A. Times. And then there's three more dates.
Oh, you've seen it already?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, I read it yesterday. And
I just heard about it.
It's, you know, it's very powerful, makes a case for, you know, those who are very upset about, you know, the way the country is, the direction the country is going in. And then they have several days more. It's very interesting, though, as having my first career as a newspaper reporter, as you mentioned earlier, the amazing work that is being done now by the newspapers, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the L.A. Times, USA Today. I mean, there's just some amazing journalism. Newspaper investigating going on, and as you know, and for those, you know, who I had a conversation with somebody over the weekend, for those who think that the mainstream media is tainted or biased, or, you know, good reporting isn't tainted or biased, it's good reporting. Each paper may have a different, the Wall Street Journal, by the way, right? Each paper has a different editorial philosophy. But if you're a good reporter, you go out and all you're trying to do is get the best information possible to tell the best obtainable version of the truth. And there is a truth, right? At some point, there is a truth. There's laws of physics. The sun is in the sky. There is truth. And we're trying to get to the heart of, what the issues are. It's a human effort, right? Journalism. It's not science. It's not math, but there are mistakes made along the way. But great reporters and editors are trying to get the best information to tell the best obtainable version of the truth, and there's a lot of that going on now. And we thought the newspaper industry was dead. Well, it's not dead yet.
And they're fighting back, and I can't wait to read that. I only heard about the L.A. Times story yesterday. Another thing that is true, and you can't dispute it because I assert it's fact, is how this show makes a difference to people of all faiths and religions. That's our objective. We want to make a positive impact in the world. And here are reasons why you should listen to us every day, in the words of our health guru, Beverly Nadler.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And, folks, we invite you to participate with us in having that happen. Simply go to Joyce Barry, Barrie, and
www.ShaperFriends.com, and on the upper left of my homepage, right under my picture, it says follow. Simply by clicking on that, you'll hear about every show, every guest, every topic. You need not miss any of them, because if you can't join us when we are live at 11 a.m. Eastern weekdays, you can listen to us 24/7 in our archives. You can put any of the people, Dr. Bernie Siegel, even Eric Greenberg, on the upper left of the homepage, and all their shows will come up. Speaking of which, you can hear another show on anti-Semitism that was very good, in conjunction with Rabbi Potasnik. That would be Rabbi Greenberg and Rabbi Potasnik, in our archives, February 24, 2017. The archives, it's always last one on top, most current show on top. You can download the shows, you can email the links, you can put them up on your website, so it's always there. We have never taken any show out. We've been on the air, Joyce Barry and Friends, almost 8 years. They are all there. So do check us out and see what shows resonate with you. Back to you, Rabbi.
Well, I was just going to say, this is much better than watching television. Go to your archives and spend your evenings doing that.
Well, the good news is it's all positive. We don't have negativity. It is all positive and designed to impact your life spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically.
Right, and so that's why I liked what you said earlier about trying to do something. One of the things we're doing here in New York, particularly here in Queens, New York, where I am at the moment, we're trying to get the diverse. Queens is one of the most diverse places on earth. There are, I believe, something like 130 different ethnicities and 120 different languages spoken in this what's called a borough. For those who are not familiar with New York City, New York City is made up of 5 different boroughs, and each borough could be one of the largest cities in America. It's kind of interesting. They all banded together back 100 years ago. But Queens is particularly has people from all over the world living here. And pretty much lives peacefully next to each community lives next to each other peacefully, but didn't really get to know each other. There would be maybe an occasional interfaith service for Thanksgiving, for instance, where some of the Christian and Jewish leaders would get together and once a year. But as a result of recent events, it's become clear that we need to work together more. We need to know each other. We need to basically support each other. So I've been involved in this effort to put together a Queens Interfaith Council and in that a Jewish-Muslim dialogue to get the imams and the rabbis together, to get our congregations, to get our people to know each other, to get our kids to know each other, the women immediately, and God bless it, this is just terrific. They saw this, before everybody, and decided to start meeting together. Women from the Muslim community and the women from the Jewish Center and holding meetings and talking and discussing, issues of the day and even simple things like raising your kids and the difficulties in the world with the internet and some of the things that are happening, safety issues. So this is so important in a place where there is such diversity. Around the country there are similar places, and I would say that's one of the things. What to do? Reach out to your neighbors who are different, who have a different faith, who have a different culture, and reach out to them and start learning about them, and building up your community, because in the end this is where you live, and this is ways for people to protect each other. Some of the women in the Muslim community and the Hindu community, certainly the women who wear hijabs, said when they trusted us enough to be able to say it, they said they're afraid to go out to go shopping. Now, they're afraid they're going to be attacked for being Muslim because they're, clearly Muslim. Or they're afraid that they're going to be picked up by immigration officers and they won't be able to see their kids again. I don't think that's the kind of America that we want to be living in.
No, but that's really a true, that is a fact. That's not an alternative fact. That is a fact. And in my many conversations with people of all faiths, everyone has reason to be afraid. So here was the Muslim ban and what you just shared. Now the Jews are afraid with the graffiti and the bomb threats and all of that. So what hasn't been affected? I especially like this quote from Martin Niemöller. It's on display on the permanent exhibition of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. And it says, first they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. And
right.
That really sums it up.
That is one of the great quotes, and it is so true. It was true then, and it's true today. And again, that sort of underlines the whole idea of working together and building alliances and supporting each other. And I think that's getting back to what to do. That's one of the things to do.
Another thing is, I mentioned social media, and you can monitor and eliminate those posts that show up on your website and then notify Twitter or Facebook, whatever, so maybe they can block that person. But sadly, the problem cannot be eliminated solely by social media companies monitoring and removing offensive posts. If people can't go to a house of worship in L.A. or Montana, then everyone's religious freedom is going to be on the line. And as for an issue as significant as religious freedom, the foundation upon which the U.S. was founded, it's going to take all hands on deck. We're going to need a coalition of companies, communities, parents, kids, and a little push from the government.
Yeah, well, that's from your mouth to God's ear.
Yeah.
Yes. I just read this morning that two out of the many offices that have not been filled yet in Washington involve religion. One is the ambassador for religious freedom, and the latest one was one of the great rabbis in America, Rabbi David Saperstein, who did this job under Obama. The first rabbi picked for this position, by the way. There was never a rabbi before who was chosen to do this, to be the ambassador at large to the world for the United States on issues of religious freedom. And Rabbi David did a terrific job and went all over the world and built partnerships. And of course, once the Obama administration was over, everybody was asked to hand in their resignation, and that post has not been filled yet. It's very important. It's a very important job. The other office is the Office of Faith-Based Partnerships, which still also has not had a member selected. So, we're sort of understaffed at the moment.
Yeah, but how much faith do you have, given who's doing the picking and choosing, that we're going to get the right people? We have a person in charge of schools who never went to public school a day in her life. We have the Environmental Protection Agency headed by someone who wants to disband it. So how confident are you that good people will have these positions? I'm not confident, sadly.
Well, you asked the question you asked was how much faith do I have? So that's I don't know if you were being the pun was intended, but we have to have faith, because if we don't have faith and hope, what are we going to do?
No, I agree with you. And, of course, I'm a person of faith, you know, with all of life's challenges. But in a way, pun intended, because it's so scary. Look at how many positions you can write a list of people that know nothing about what they're doing. I forget the name of one of them. He was in the 17 vying for the Republican nomination. The neurosurgeon, what's his name? He's in charge
Ben,
of urban health.
Ben Carson.
Yeah, Ben Carson. Look what he's in charge of. He has no idea what it's about. And there's someone else in another agency who didn't even remember the name of the agency when in an interview. He couldn't think of it.
The former governor of Texas.
You're like a walking encyclopedia.
Yeah, there's a lot of unnecessary information floating around in my head. Well, look, you know, this is where we're at, and again, we have to. I think to your point, what can we do about these things? This is the hand we've been dealt. So the question is now, what do we do? And I think you've raised you know, many of the possibilities and the actions that people can take. I hope I've raised a few as well of what you can do in your neighborhood. And I think, you know, to quote the prior president of the United States in his farewell speech, he laid it out for us. And I would have, whether you were Obama's supporter or not, he was still president of the United States for 8 years. And he made the point that if you want to do something, get up and do it, go out there. You know, what did he say? Grab a notebook and a pen and start getting signatures. Because in the end, it is we the people, and it's the citizens who run this country. And we need to vote. We need to go out there and make happen what we want to happen.
Rabbi, as we're wrapping up here, I would like you two things. One, to give a message, a concluding message to the folks. What message do you want to leave them with? And then I'm going to ask you to leave us all with a special prayer.
Well, thank you. So as usual, a pleasure to be with you today. I think the message is we, people of goodwill, people of faith and of no faith, need to work together, to band together, both locally in their neighborhoods and for the greater good, and mobilize and unite in order to make the changes they are seeking. And I think that's the bottom line. Fighting anti-Semitism, fighting Islamophobia, the defamation of any people, securing the rights of all. I think that's the message that we can do together. As far as a prayer goes, being that Passover is just around the corner, I'd like to offer a prayer that we are all delivered from slavery, whether it be physical, medical, or psychological, into a wonderful freedom that will allow us to breathe and live better.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. Thank you for joining us. Open invitation. We want you, anytime you have a message, which is probably every day, you're so wise and all-encompassing. So thank you for making time for us today. We appreciate you, and we hope to have you back real soon.
Thank you, and many blessings to you, and be well.
Thank you. Okay, folks, my closing message is in the form of a quote from Edmund Burke. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And I say for good men and women to do nothing. Nobody made a greater mistake than he, I say, or she, who did nothing because he could do only a little. And Voltaire, who said, every man is guilty of all the good he did not do. Ditto for women. Every woman is guilty of all the good he did not do. And my closing prayer is, may yesterday be the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May today be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. Folks, thank you so much for joining us today. It was really an important show. We encourage you to make your difference. And at the same time, we want you to be happy. So please know you can sing along with us, dance along with us, and laugh along with us. And you can do that starting right here, right now, to the Joyce Barry Mash. And here we go.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop, I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again. As Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Have a fantastic day.
Wow.
And listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.
Wow.